Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the latest special edition of the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by one of the heroes of our 1991 Scottish Cup winning side, Jim Griffin. Jim, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
No problem, Andy. It's a privilege and thanks for asking me on.
Well, Jim, I'm just going to get right into it. You had come through the youth ranks at Fir Park, supported the club as a boy and got to live out your dream by making your first team debut, albeit in possibly not the best circumstances with the result in that game, but you make your debut in a game against Hibs in 1986. What was the overriding emotions?
It was quite strange because at that time we were part-time. And the Thursday night, the team went up in the dressing room. You know, so at that particular point, Fraser Wishart was in contract talks and I don't think they were going particularly well. And then all of a sudden my name appeared on this team sheet. For Saturday report for the game. So the boys started to wind up, as you can imagine. But really, at that point, you think to yourself, well, have I got any chance of playing or no? And then people did mention that, obviously, Skip was obviously in consultation with the club over his contract, so therefore, it possibly could happen. So it was quite an exciting time, but without getting carried away, because, you know, you never know what's going to happen, but you just prepare for, like, any other game, to be honest with you. You know It's going to be difficult. It's going to be your first time in that big theatre, if you like. And the one thing you don't want to do is let yourself down, or your family down, or your friends.
Was there a lot of people kind of in attendance to? That was the point where Motherwell were just making their way in the top flight, and obviously haven't been out of the top flight since.
Yeah, I think really, to be honest with you, obviously the Motherwell supporters are there, which is great. But you know, it was a fantastic atmosphere. At Easter Road, and it was great, you know, because the Hibs fans, it was very close. They were on top of you in the game, and they had very, very good players at that time, Stevie Cowan and Gordon Jury and whatnot, so they had a very good following, and they were doing particularly well under Alex Muller. So in terms of the crowd, you know, yeah, there was a more following, obviously, but you know, it was obviously superseded by the numbers and the Hibernian fans.
Unfortunately, throughout your career, you were plagued with injuries that almost kind of seemed to slow your progression down. Anytime you seemed to be making strides in the side, you would drop out due to injuries. And it must have been a very difficult thing. I know that just now you look at players that are out the side and there's a lot of focus on how their mental health is and factors like that. For you, coming in as a young boy, getting your opportunity, dropping out due to injury, getting back in and then picking up another injury, that must have been very difficult and very challenging in terms of your own mental strength.
I think, Andy, it's a very, very good point. But it was, first of all, frustrating, because obviously you did start to pick up. You got a wee opportunity. Fortunately, I never let myself down in any great sense, so I was then given further opportunities. But yeah, my knee started to give me some issues, some problems. But at that particular time, without really knowing, it actually built up a resilience within myself, because I'm a great person who competes not only against himself but others and set myself challenges and goals. So every time there was a setback, I had to set myself goals and targets and things that were achievable. And sometimes the frustrating part for that for me was I wanted to get there sooner than I really should have. So I pushed myself maybe too hard, or I had to be restricted, if you like, by the physiotherapist and the guidance and the training schedules and the plans that we had, because I just wanted to get back into it. So sometimes I had to pull the reins on me and say, look, no, you need to just take it easy. But absolutely, it was frustrating mental health wise in terms of how you felt about yourself. Yeah, you're low, but you've got to pick yourself up. You know, it's and then you've got to find some kind of mechanism or way of picking yourself up. And for myself, for me, I found that an alternative in terms of I had an incline, if you like, but my knee wasn't quite getting right. I went to college, I went to night school, did a couple of hires. I'd obviously left school and started an apprenticeship before going to Motherwell. So that gave me a focus, something at night away from football. So there was a distraction, but there was a focus. And I think that gave me something just to say, do you know what? It gave me an opportunity to put it to bed, no, behind me, but just at the side, where it was still going on, but I had something else to focus on and something to concentrate on that had would be beneficial for myself in the long term, and that's what it proved to be. So going to college, doing a couple of hires, then going back to college. At that time it was Coat Bridge College. I went and done my hires, maths and physics, and then I left, completed them, and then I went to the old Motherwell College and did my HNC in multidisciplinary engineering, and it was really good. It was very good. And from that, again, sometimes in life you need to be fortuitous, and I really believe that. And it was when Motorola, I graduated, I got an award through SQA for that particular course, and Motorola was the sponsors at the club at that particular time. It was actually the pre-season of 1991. Yep, the summer of 91, just coming back, and Tony Joyce, one of the directors of Motorola, came up and asked me because he'd seen it in an engineering journal. I'd won this award and asked me what I was going to be doing and if I wanted to go to university. Now, Andy, with the greatest respect, that, you know, I thought I was deplorable at English at school. You know, my English teacher actually said to me, and this is true, I went into the hiring and she said, what are you doing here? I didn't even look to see if you got your O grade. And that's the truth. You know, the same teacher I had for 5 years. And I just went to my usual bit up the back. And I thought to myself, I can read and write. I don't need to bother with this. Much to my detriment, to be honest with you. It was a very, very blind and naive attitude to have as a youngster, but hey, you learn from your mistakes, don't you? And I think that's another important lesson, by learning from your mistakes. So he said about going to university. So I met the principal at the university, and I started my business management course. It was a business degree I'd done at that particular time. And that was 3 nights and a Friday. So in between being injured and playing, I still had an opportunity to go away and escape, if you like. You know, somewhere to go, somewhere different, as a safety net in such a way. And that gave me a fantastic opportunity then to focus on something else. And again, things changing to be variables. And it was something I was interested in. And I think that's really, really important. You know, the topics that I chose were really of interest. And some of them were quite obscure, to be honest with you. You know, some of some of the stuff that made up the units that we were doing. But it was very, very interesting, and for me that was great. And that degree then gave me like a platform, if you like, to build my education on in later times. And that's exactly why I continued with education at night school and at that particular time through Paisley University, because I knew my knee was playing up. I knew there was just something just not quite right. So that's really where eventually that's where it led to.
It's a really interesting one, that, because obviously at this current time there's so many players that will be facing uncertainty regarding their contracts, whether or when football will resume in its usual form. They may be at a kind of crossroads where they don't know whether this could be their last club or their last contract. Yet there doesn't seem to be much of an inbuilt kind of stepping stone into or back into education for footballers, certainly not from an outsider's point of view. You don't see very many players turning back to education. Is that something that's perhaps a bit short-sighted and naive?
It depends on the individuals and the players. It was really very fortunate whereby most of the clubs engage in not a scholarship programme, but an education programme. Through the MA Achieving Excellence in Sports Performance, which is an SVQ at level 3. back through SQA. And it's a very good qualification. That gives them a ground and a foundation, a stepping stone for whoever's going in and assessing them to observe them and their competence, work-based competence. And also them for them to put information on paper. Now, that certainly wasn't the case when I was, obviously, as a kid, because I took the route of being an apprentice engineer for a couple of years. So they've got that thing. But I think, really, it's an uncertain time. It's so unpredictable for everybody at the present moment in time, not just in football. So, really, I think other people have... You have to look out, you know, out with sometimes, just to see what's there. Because if you live within your own wee bubble, your shell, you won't develop, you won't grow. And sometimes you need to take yourself out of their comfort zone, if you like. And that's a good thing. A lot of people think, oh, I don't like to be taken at my comfort zone because then I might be showing up, I might show weaknesses or whatever. Well, do you know what? I think it's really good to learn by your mistakes. I think it's really good to put yourself in a situation because it's really incredible how your confidence grows when you think, oh, I've just done that. And that self-belief, that confidence, and it can grow. And that certainly sets people up for life and life skills and skills for life that they will require.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go into the 90-91 season in just a second. But there was obviously, along with your injuries, a pretty high-profile incident with Colin McNair as well that led to Colin being sacked by the football club. And again, something that you had to deal with. You've talked about the importance of learning from mistakes, and you would have been set back by this as well at the time. Was it difficult to deal with the attention that came with such an incident?
Yeah, because I'm quite a private person, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, I would say to anybody, and this might sound very, very strange, I wish I was more confident when I was playing football. I wish I was more confident as a kid. Self-belief is a massive thing. And I reiterate that to the boys during our education program at the football club every single week. And that's the thing. So therefore, for myself and the Colin McNair incident, yeah, the spotlight, the whole thing, it was a shock to my system. It happened on the Thursday and I was let home on the Friday. I'm sure it was on the Saturday morning. There was a couple of news reporters outside my front gate in a car with cameras and whatnot, and I thought, no, this isn't right, you know. So they were really decent, and I asked them to leave. I spoke to them and I asked them to leave, and so there was nothing there, you know. So really, that was it. But the biggest thing for me, and again, somebody's misfortune, somebody's good fortune. You know, I believe in that as well. So for myself, the misfortune of what happened in the training ground incident with Colin McNair, where myself and George Burley went to break up a confrontation between Paul McGrillen, God rest him, and Colin McNair. And it was just the circumstances that developed from that. Fortunately, I can't remember it to this day. I just remember approaching with my back to Colin McNair at that particular time and using the strength of my life, because he was a big bit of a boy and he was a centre-back, you know, to push him away. And at that point, he's just spun half round, and I've ended up on all fours, and he's volleyed me. So that's exactly what happened. You know, but I can't remember. I can only remember going towards that. And then there's fleeting situations on the way from the training ground down at Smithycroft at that particular time to the club. John Hart was the physio at the time there. He just came straight out and said, because the minibus, it was Ian Cardo took me up on the minibus, and he said he needs to go to hospital straight away. So they could see, you know, and I was again the surgeon, Mr. McSween, Wally McSween, who did the operations up at the lot at that particular time. He had heard that a player was on their way up, and it was nice that it was somebody who I knew I was going in, because I knew I was in safe hands then, so that helped as well that way. But to be honest with you, I don't think, if with the misfortune and the good fortune, and this is where it's quite ironic, but this is where I take the positive from it. And I always try and take positivity and from everything and every situation, and learn from every situation, is that I believe if that never happened, I wouldn't have played in the cup final. Because the way it was going with 6 months on and 6 months off, roughly 45, 6 months, I would have missed it. Because I'd have been playing at that particular line up to Christmas, say, for instance, just into January, and my knee would have been playing up. But then I had to go in and get a procedure done to enable me to go again, to kickstart again. So for that point of view, and when you take it from there, yeah, that incident happened, but then it came into court, and it was the semi-final against Celtic, and that was the court case that day. So that I remember going back to the club and the gaffer, Tom McLean, asking me, he said, "How do you feel?" I went, "What do you want me to do? I can't change it. It is what it is. I'm here to play football. I'd like to play football, and that's all I want to do." So fortunate enough, I was picked, and he played me. Because he knew what he was going to get. You know, I'm nowhere near the skill sets or that of Davy Cooper. But he knew I could always give 100%. And again, that's a mentality that I've got. I don't understand players who can't give 100%, or any individual who can't give 100% to their job, who are lazy, who are weak, and look at others and blame others for their own insecurities. You know, and for me, that's just a no-no. It's the only thing anybody can guarantee is doing their very, very best. And see if they make mistakes, fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've taken us nicely on to the beginning of the 90s Cup run. Obviously started at the holders, Aberdeen. Stevie Kirk comes off the bench and scores his first touch of the ball. And the fairy tale kind of just stems from there, doesn't it? There's the Falkirk victory, but then the Morton game, which was really topsy-turvy and worrying at times. It goes all the way to penalties, and then the incredible semi-final, a dire first game, and then you could intercept at any point here. But the circumstances, you don't normally get two shots at either of the firm. If they don't put you away the first time, or you don't beat them in the first occasion, then very rarely in that second time are you going to get a positive result. So to come out winners on that night and in such amazing circumstances, at that point, do you feel almost like it's your destiny to go on and win the cup?
Not your destiny, but you know you've got an opportunity, and you've got a chance, and because that was an incredible night. But taking you back to the Aberdeen game, the Soccer Sixes were on at the SECC at the time, and I got an eye injury. And I was in the Western Infirmary for 3 nights, and I got out on a Thursday. And I went in the club on the Thursday. I'm telling you, it was a Wednesday night, but it was the Thursday I went into the club. And the wee man pulled me into his office. He's like, "You can fit for Saturday." And I went, "What?" I said, "I've just been lying in a bed for 3 days, and all patched up with a patch on it, and all out to move." "Fuck, it's only your eye," he said to me.
"You've got another one."
And I went, yeah, well, you know, I said, but the difference what I said to him was, I says, "This isn't my knee, where I can get a replacement knee in the future. I don't get a replacement eye." And he just looked at me. And in his own gentle, persuasive way, he asked me to leave the room. And that's a polite way of putting it. And he took me up to Aberdeen on the Friday to stay overnight. No chance of me playing. And then that was him. So I played every game after that, the Aberdeen game, up to the Falkirk game. And then he dropped me. He didn't play me for the Falkirk game. Said he was making tactical changes. Fine, you respect that. You move on. And then in the Morton game, we really should have been put out at home. Morton were the better team. It was a terrible performance. But at that time, a player for Morton came off the bench, Mark Pickering, and unfortunately caught me in my ankle, and I went over my ankle and I was in crutches. So I missed the Morton replay, and then obviously getting into the Celtic games. They were just incredible. Fortunate but unfortunate in the first game, because Fergie's had a smash and just at the junction of the crossbar and the post, he smashed off that towards the end of the game, and you're thinking to yourself, is that our chance gone? So then we get into the replay, and it was like the charge of the Light Brigade. Celtic, they were on top of us, and we ground the result. We ground our way back into that game, and I think that was the testament of the team. You know, we had a really good work ethic, a good team spirit. And we just grew on the night. I think we grew individually and collectively on the night, to be honest with you, against Celtic, to go and then get that fantastic end performance, that fantastic end result. And yeah, it was just the start of the dream, if you like, at that particular point, because then it was the cup final. And we actually, you know, the results weren't particularly good up until we didn't get United. But we played them in a midweek match. We beat them 1-0 in the lead up to the cup final. And I think that certainly helped as well. That wasn't a particularly good game, but we got that result, we got that victory. And it was more or less like probably the same team who were playing in the cup. So we knew that there was an opportunity there. We had beat them in the past, so there was no reason why we couldn't win again. with a good performance, because it would have to be a good performance against the quality of the team that United had at that particular time.
The build-up must have been something particularly special. I know that in Motherwell, the press coverage, even to this day, it's not anywhere near the likes that the so-called Big Two get, or perhaps the Edinburgh sides get. But you're going into a cup final with another provincial club. There's a family feel to it, with the two brothers as managers of the respective clubs as well. The hysteria and the excitement around the town must have been something really special to be able to soak up in the days leading up to that final.
We could see the bunting and that, you know, Andy, before we went away, because we went away down to the coast for a few days. Tommy took us away, the wee man took us away down there. So that was a very, very good smart move, to be honest with you. So we were done there, but we could get the sense we'd be people phoning us and whatnot, and each player saying, listen, you ought to see the butcher shops, the bakers and that kind of stuff, and how they're making cakes. Everybody's really getting engaged in the whole process. And I think at the time when the town was and not in a particularly good situation with Ravens, Craig, and all that kind of stuff, so it gave everybody a lift, an opportunity, it gave everybody an adversity, I think, something to focus on. Something that could be really positive again, and I'll keep saying that. I think in terms of people who maybe don't feel as only the best place at this moment in time, you know, there are always opportunities. You know, there's something better there. There is definitely, you just need to look for it and seek the games to get that and get the help and support to get that, and don't be prepared, be worried in terms of asking. You know. I think that's really, really, really important. So going back to your point. Then on Saturday morning, we could see it on the telly. We were in the hotel, and we went down and we could see all the fans, the face paint and all that kind of stuff. And it was just incredible. It was absolutely incredible. The journey up from the coast, cars going by with the flags and scarves and everything flying at the back. You're like, wow. You know, that's when it started to really set in, that we could be taking part in something very special. And I think it was a very special cup final, because unfortunately, if you think of the lead up to the cup final, and unfortunately the death within the family, and the players were at the funeral as well, and whatnot, both sets and the United, Jim and Tommy's father, you know, so that whole thing, the build up to that for them must have been a horrendous time for them. But again, the professionalism, you know, somewhere within them, they found, well, certainly Tommy, I can only speak for Tommy, he found that he had it within himself to go and not only look after ourselves, but lift us and prepare us for the biggest game of most of their lives. And that's testament to Tommy as well.
So what point do you find out that you're in the starting 11 for that cup final?
it's a very good question. One of the stand-up jokes for myself and Chris. Chris was my roommate. Chris McCann was my roommate, my pal. And it was the night before, and the manager was focusing on height, the importance of height, you know, because obviously they were, you know, a few big units within their team. Very good players, technically as well, you know. So I went to bed and I had the best sleep I ever had, because I'm like, oh, I'm no playing. Chris was up all night because he knew he was playing. But no, thankfully, it was in the morning again, and we found out. And again, some people's misfortune, somebody's good fortune. I was very, very fortunate that I was selected within the third team to go and play. Could quite easily not have been, especially, you know, just playing in the Morton game, one game. And okay, I played the two for against Celtic, but there were other players, as you know, and commonly been in the media and spoke about a lot. Players who possibly should have played, possibly shouldn't have been included because injury. But you know what? You're just grateful. You're just grateful that you are part of that team, and ultimately we all became legends.
Yeah, and it was so nice to be able to watch the game back on the BBC Scotland channel. I think that has been one of the rare positives of all this madness that's going on just now, being able to sit and watch old Scottish football matches in BBC, get the chance to watch it back.
I did. You know, and it was the first time I've ever watched it. It's the first time I sat and watched it with the boys. Yep, and me and my wife. Absolutely. Never watched it before because I'm quite critical of myself. You know, I always reflect on things and look back and I think I should have done better. Watching the game, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. I was fortunate. I knew on the day, things didn't go particularly well for me. So I know that. In terms of how I felt up coming off the game and how I'd played. So, but still to look back and think, oh, I could have done that, I should have done this, I should have done that. You know, I'm a bit like that. I reflect on lots of things and I'm very, very self-critical. Now, whether that's an attribute that you have to have to reach the top of the game or to have an opportunity to reach the top of a game or the top of your profession, I don't know. I really don't know. But for myself, it was definitely I just very, 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 very fortunate. Very fortunate.
It's certainly interesting that because one of my good mates said when he knew you were coming on, said that he very much believed that you were the unsung hero of the 120 minutes and his man of the match. So it's I suppose self-criticism is easier, but there certainly were many that thought you had an absolutely outstanding game in a game that so many really put in a performance. So there's a wee bit of a contrast in opinion in the whole thing.
No, is it? You know, don't get me wrong, I knew I played well. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't play well, not at all. I said things went really well for me on the day. But, you know, in terms of going back and looking at it, I just thought, no, do you know what? But there was an ideal opportunity. This is an unprecedented time. If I was ever going to have a great opportunity to sit and relax and chillax with the family, watch that game without any interruptions, it was now, because nobody's coming in chapping the door or anything like, you know, so we're in self-isolation just like everybody else, so we take that opportunity, and it was a great game. So fortunate to be part of it, and so fortunate that so many people, we brought a lot of joy to so many people at that particularly difficult time in their lives, in terms of jobs and the community and the doom and gloom around Motherwell and Ravenscraig. Special moment.
It was really funny to watch on in social media as Motherwell fans were saying that they still believed that we could actually go on and lose the game, despite the fact that we're almost 30 years removed from it. They still thought we might contrive to find a way to.
It was funny because some of my colleagues, they texted me the following day and said, I get so excited for that game. It was unbelievable. And I was like, who's going to win this? And I was like, and then they think it was 30 years ago. So, as you know, it's one of these things you just think engrossed in it. That was that, you know. So, no, you're right. No, but no, it was very, very good. Very good. It was very well timed, I think. Yeah.
What about the days afterwards and the celebrations around the town? I kind of recall my parents saying that it felt like on the day of the game that no one was left in Motherwell. the whole town had went to Hampden for the day. And then obviously the days after that, you're 39 years from your last cup victory. It's a massive, massive achievement and possibly emphasised as the fact that we've not went on and won another major trophy since then. So the days following, they may be a wee bit hazy for you, but they must be hold special memories as well. And the fact the great joy and just the exhilaration that it brought everyone associated with this brilliant football club.
Absolutely. You know, we got back to Fir Park, and obviously the fans and all that were there. It was great around about the stadium. Then we left there, myself and Chris. And Chris lived in a street just down from Fir Park there at that particular time. And walking down, and the people were, you know, families were coming out and congratulating us and inviting us in for drinks and all that kind of stuff. You know, just to come in and just to talk, it was great, you know, just to be part of it. And then we left and we went to Angels before going to my mum and dad's, Angels and Livingston, because I knew a few of the boys and there's a couple of ardent Motherwell supporters in there. And it was just to show them a medal. So myself and Chris the medal. So we went in there, left there, went up, seen my mum and dad. And then there was a night at the Civic on the Saturday night. And then from there, we just really, you know, different places, different, you know, pubs and whatnot, just with the fans and speaking to the fans and all that kind of stuff. And it was quite amazing. But the following day was surreal as well. You know, the cup final was surreal, still surreal. But the following day, where we the bus, the open top bus, and it was just incredible. you know. And I think I've said the story in sort of colour after dinner speeches I've ever done, or after discussions with people, where Davy Cooper did say, he said, "This is just incredible." He said, "I would never had this opportunity if I'd still at Rangers." And that, you know, that day I thought, wow, we are so privileged. So privileged. You know, there's a man who'd achieved so much in football, but had never had that opportunity. So, yeah. So for myself, it was incredible.
I think there was a lot of really poignant and lovely tributes to Davy and the anniversary of his death last month. And I think the most glowing terms that I heard was from another supporter in one of the forums that said that when Davy Cooper joined, he really had doubts that it may just be his retirement party. He was going to wind down and do it at Fir Park, because there would be more criticism if he was to do that in the big stage of Ibrox. Instead, his career again flourished, and he just reignited that spark. It's almost ridiculous to think how long he lasted in that cup final as well. Ali McCoy makes a comment about the fact how is Davy Cooper still on the park here?
And then in defensive area. Listen, I'll be perfectly honest with you. Coop went to training every day, and then he was out running at night. So, you know, so he was doing road runs and that kind of stuff. His fitness level improved dramatically. And that was a fantastic, as a model for a role model for the younger players and players within the club. You know, he was a gentleman. You know, I've said that many, many times. Davy Cooper was a gentleman, and an incredible influence in the club, an incredible influence in individual players within the club, and was a key part of that success in that club, within the club at that particular time. And us pushing on, and many players pushed on from there and moving to other clubs.
Yeah, and this kind of sad point in all the stuff about the cup victory is to look back now and see how many of your teammates are sadly no longer with us. And it was a really kind of touching reminder of the incredible energy that Phil O'Donnell had in his younger years, and he took that right up into his second spell at the football club as well. He was always the driving force. He was the talisman. Paul McGrillin as well. Jamie Dolan was involved at the club during your time. It must be quite horrendous, really, to even consider it.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, I think what it does show you is how fragile life can be. You know, so therefore enjoy life, enjoy what you've got, because you never know when it might not be there, or you might not get these opportunities to go and enjoy yourself, and I think that's really what's quite important for the family, for the families left behind, and devastating. You know, I can't comprehend how they feel. You know, I don't think you, unless you're in those circumstances yourself, and you know, then no, absolutely not. And thankfully, touch wood, it's not happened again in recent years, and hopefully it won't for a lot longer.
We'll move on to the following season, and the reward of the Scottish Cup win, of course, was European football. Only brought it with it one tie, but again, that's a different experience from what you would have been used to. Was the emotion following that one of somewhat disappointment that the team weren't able to kick on and maybe test themselves against more established teams or even just bigger names, really?
Absolutely. You know, we were very, very unfortunate in the first game. You know, we came back to Fir Park and again, we dominated the game. We had opportunities, we had chances. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Katowice had a few Polish internationals, good team. And in that stage, it was fantastic atmosphere again at Fir Park for the second leg. And yeah, it was disappointing, but it was an experience. And we let ourselves down in terms of no progressing, but in terms of performances-wise, I don't think anybody could really criticise in terms of effort and all that kind of stuff again. And we gave ourselves a chance, we gave ourselves the opportunity, but unfortunately, in this occasion, it never worked out for us.
Yeah, and we've discussed through the podcast where you had great highs on the park, particularly in that 91 Cup when injuries were always a factor. And from this point forward, it really began to kind of dominate your career. Eventually, you would have to hang up your boots.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still, when it happened, it still came as a shock. You know, there was the option. The surgeon in Edinburgh at that particular day, and he did say, you know, went through the pros and cons of having the reconstruction done, but there was a 60-70% chance he'd end up with a straight leg, and there was no guarantee that I'd come back. And to be fair to Tommy McLean, he said, "You're finished. I'm not allowing you that. That's not happening. I'm not allowing you to take that risk, that chance." Because it's crazy to say, but you think you're indestructible. In a sense, as a player, when you're jumping at your skin and you're as fit as a fiddle, you know, with the greatest respect, it's, you just think you're untouchable at times, you know. But when he said those words, you know, that was as I say, the father fit, my football father figure, in a sense. For all his pitfalls, he was brilliant to me, you know, to be the greatest respect to him and Tom Forsyth, Big Tom. You know, so yeah, and he essentially said, and I says, "No." He says, "Well, I'm telling you now, I'm releasing it next week." So he said, "I'm telling you that right now." And I went back to the club. And also, you know, my contract and whatnot. And he said, "Like, that's you make sure you've got to come in here every day. You're still going to get your treatment, which is, they're looking after you, which they would do anyway." He said, "But I want you to bring your stuff for university," because he knew my exams were coming up in the summer. And I said, "You make sure you pass the exams." And the reward for that was he then offered me a coaching job for a year. And I took that on, but unfortunately he left and went to Hearts that particular summer, and Alec and Andy came in. So, and again, things just worked well with Alec and Andy until they moved to Hibernian. So, yep, absolutely. It's very, very fortunate again. Yeah, yep. And you know, in times of adversity, whether it's luck, whether it's just being in the right place at the right time, or just really the as an individual, you know, the attributes that I had, people seen. The skill sets I had, the attributes I had at that particular time that I maybe never seen, and they gave me an opportunity, a chance, and sometimes that's all people need, a chance.
Yeah, and it's certainly one that you took as well. Another thing I'd like to talk about is the testimonial against Wolves. Now, I was quite young at the time. My only memory of that night is the match programme with the captain of the Wolves are coming in the front of it. That is.
That's right.
Simply, yeah. All I can remember that whole night. Yeah. You may be able to tell me a bit more.
Well, it was actually, obviously, Alec had the connection with Mark McGee. And at that particular time, there was a testimonial being arranged for John Philbin. So I actually said it was a benefit match. It wasn't a testimonial, because I said, no, absolutely not, because there were other people within the football club who deserved a testimonial before me, who'd been there longer than me and who were still playing with the football club. So I made that perfectly clear to my committee when they sort of set it up. So it came around, it was at the same time as Softy was, John Philbin was getting his arranged. John had arranged his just in the August day, you know, as part of the pre-season warm-up. So, Andy, to be perfectly honest, I was just delighted that the club had offered to us to get a match. Wolves was a great team. Steve Bull at the time was playing with them. And to get that opportunity, so no, it was fantastic, you know, and it was a good night. It seemed to be a good night anyway. People enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it, and my family enjoyed it. So yeah, yep, very, 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 very fortunate again. You know, very quite humbled in a sense to be to actually have received that benefit match. Yep.
After Alex McLeish and Andy Watson had left for Hibs, Andy Watson took a game in caretaker charge and then left after, I believe it was a Scottish Cup replay at Ibrox. That followed a game against Hearts on the Saturday, and you would take charge. So you went full circle from supporting the club as a boy to going through the youth ranks to playing for the first team to winning the Scottish Cup, playing in Europe, and then here you are managing the football club. that is quite a journey, wouldn't you? You take it step by step.
It was an incredible journey. You know, it was incredible. You know, it was a roller coaster in every way, shape, and form, with the highs and lows, and that was a particular high. That they build up that particular week when Alan Dick said, you know, to me that particular thing, you'll need to take the team. And the players reacted. The players were fantastic on the day. Really, again, being a bit, we lost obviously to a very good Hearts team, but we started particularly well, really well. I remember then Ian Ross unfortunately had to come off, and that was a pivotal moment in that game because I do believe we'd have been on to beat Hearts that particular day. We went 2-1 at half time. We just conceded a goal just before half time, but we had opportunities up the other end. Tommy Coyne and Owen Coyle, the Cobra and whatnot, and two prolific goal scorers who you'd bet your mortgage on them scoring. You know, so it could have been something so different at half time. We came out, and again against that Stefan Adam and whatnot, a quality Hearts team, and they came out on top. And it was ironic because it was Peter Houston and Billy Brown who took the team that day because Jim Jeffries was in the hospital. And it was myself and Houston who were sort of like taking the reserves and whatnot at that time for the Hearts and Mull. So the twos were in opposing dugouts for that particular day. So that was a Hearts game. But the funny story about that one was when I said to my wife at the time, she went, "You better go and get a suit." So to make a last minute ditch in the Thursday to go and get a suit, so I was at least looked the part, as she said. So that was a build up to the Hearts game and the Hearts game itself, and then obviously the midweek game against St Johnstone. And Harry Campbell had came across from Finland. He was in the stand watching the game. St Johnstone absolutely battered us, but we came out 1-0 victors. So, not a bad record. Manager 50% winning record, so I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. You should wear that as a badge of honour. The appointment of Harry Campman spelled the end for quite a lot of the more senior players. I've had quite a few on here who questioned his methods, the likes of Brian Martin in particular, very, very critical. And he was critical at the time, although he's quite keen to stress the fact that a lot of the things he said about Harry Campman were off the record at the time. Unfortunately, they ended up in the Daily Record, and that's where his problems with Harry Campman really kind of stemmed from. But the change at the club and the transition, I always remember the picture of the players and the tractor on the pitch, and it was almost as if a new squad had arrived over the summer. You saw the likes of Tommy Coyne going to Dundee, Willie Faulkner went to Dundee, John Philibin left the football club, Brian Martin left the football club. There was the spine and the players that had been so integral to the unit were all on their way out, and they were replaced by players that were much of an unknown. Now, some of them came to Firth Park and did very well. Some of them quite clearly weren't at the level required. And then, obviously, you've got behind the scenes John Boyle coming in. Harry Campman didn't last much longer after that. It was a rather strange time for the football club.
It was a very strange time. You know, Harry tried to change the culture overnight, and that's a very, very difficult thing to do in terms of people's mentalities and whatnot. You know, so if there's a lesson learned when you get into a workplace, you kind of change the culture overnight. It takes time. You know, that's what I learned from that experience. And some cultures are very difficult to change. And people are so set in their ways. People don't like change. Therefore, it takes time. So Harry, yep, definitely came in, had an ethos, had a philosophy. If you like, look at, we would be a mini Ajax, I think I could maybe say it that way, whereby the players would come in the morning, train, go, have a bed for where they could sleep, and then go back up training at lunchtime, and sometimes even back in at night. So it was three sessions a day. Within the training, within how it was organised and how the club functioned, Harry was focused on the team, and quite rightly so, he was the manager. So there was a few things going on in the background that way as well that just weren't quite right, to be honest with you. So it was what it was. As today it is for it is. That, you know, you just got to deal with the situation at the time the best you possibly can. John Boyle did come in. Brian McClure came in the summer. Also, that was Harry. Harry got the obviously for whatever, you had got wind that we could have potentially got Brian McClure. Harry was in Finland, and myself and Willie McLean met with Brian McClure. So what was, you know, Brian McClure came in, he was in the club, and then Pat Nevin came in with John Boyle and whatnot. So, and then obviously Billy Davis was appointed, so as the manager at that particular time. So that was a decision that John made. John, then again, the cultures and the change in the club, try to make us a third force in Scottish football, you know, and it never worked out for him, unfortunately. Put a lot of his own personal money in it, a lot of money in it. And again, I'm quite sure in hindsight, I don't think John would probably now, if you look back, he would probably say that was a mistake. And he made mistakes within the club at that particular time, in relation to allow it to unfortunately, to grow in such a very fast and rapid way in terms of income, players' income, in terms of expenditures against income, your players' expenditure, sorry, their wages against the income in the club. You know, and it was unsustainable, quite simply. But unfortunately, nobody's ever been taken to task on that.
Yeah, certainly it's something that over time we've tried to get to the bottom of, and had Pat Nevin on, had forgotten his name. Who was the administrator? Brian Jackson.
Yeah,
that's something we've tried to get to the bottom of. We've had Pat Nevin on, Brian Jackson. I did a bit for Nutmeg Football Magazine last year, just trying to look into the kind of whole meltdown of the situation, really. There's quite a lot of finger pointing still goes on to this day. You were out at the club the following season. Could you see it unravelling at that point?
Oh, absolutely. I'm quite happy to say that I said this is unsustainable. Almost to who I said it to, but it's unsustainable. And the individual who I said it to knows who it is. Anybody, I think off the top of my head, see, any company or any organisation can have 97% of their turnover going in players' wages. Allegedly. That kind of figure, that can't happen. You know, so why was that allowed? What was the foresight? What was the planning? What was the strategy? What was the strategic plan in place to ensure that didn't happen? When things weren't going proper, why did it just continue? Why was it allowed to continue until it got to the point of the club getting into administration? You know, those questions have never been answered.
Yeah, the Pat Evans' take very much was one of all spending had been authorised, and he was just simply working within his budget. I don't really know who was doing these budgets and what the end goal was, because it was an exciting time, I suppose. There was some big names that you would never have thought would be at the football club.
It was a great time. Don't get me wrong. It was a fantastic time. We can't take that away. But unfortunately, it was the detriment of the club. And yeah, ultimately, that was the most important entity.
That's a million percent the case. There's nothing, there's no one individual or number of individuals, players, managers that are bigger than the club itself. And really, they played Russian roulette with the football club for a couple of years. And then in 2002, it did inevitably explode. For you personally, was there a wee bit of bitterness at the circumstances and how it had unfolded? Or was it just almost a relief to get out when you did?
This might sound very strange. It was very difficult to see what was going on. It was very, very, it was difficult. It was difficult to work in that environment, to be honest with you. And, there was a weight off my shoulders when John Boyle had the meeting with me and said that my services were no longer required. So for that point of view, I left that particular day, and then that was me. You know, so, and then to see how things unfolded thereafter, you know, I don't know if it was just too late, the snowball effect. I just don't know if a dream was being chased, say, for instance. It's like somebody gambling. They just continue to gamble. You know, so I don't know. I really don't know. I wasn't in the club long enough at that particular point. But I'm quite sure that Billy Davis and obviously Pat's been on, but I'm quite sure they would be able to say who's responsible, or they should be able to, because they ultimately, they were making the decisions as well. Otherwise, were they not doing in their roles as chief executive and manager, did they have no influence? Did they not have a say? I don't know. I wasn't there, so I can't comment. That for me, look, from that point, an outsider looking in, saying, look, what's going on? You know, it was disappointing, very disappointing. A club who looked after me, including John Boyle, when I was leaving, in every way, shape and form, absolutely. Absolutely, but it was just really disappointing to see how it declined progressively so quickly.
Yeah, it really did. And as I say, I think that the more digging I did, the more and more questions that were raised rather than actual answers, I guess. It's a very complex one, and I think there is so many with different takes on it. And then, inevitably, you've also got the guys that had the livelihoods ripped from them in 2002 when they were released. Many of them have just taken up mortgages and such like, having moved their families to the local
to Scotland. Absolutely. Yep. Horrendous. Absolutely. Playing with people's lives.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look. And it's thankfully now the club in a much more even keel and a better footing. I don't want to depress you, but 2000 just started at Motherwell College. We're now sitting 20 years on in New College, Lanarkshire. It's a fantastic looking building, an institution that's got a lot of great press, and it seems that you've kind of really thrived in your new occupation. Can we call it new occupation if you've been there 20 years plus or not?
It was a complete, totally new experience. You know, I had to re-educate myself. Had to go and do my TQFE, if you like, my teaching qualification and further education, and then from there that led on to me doing my masters. You never stop learning, but the focus after time, it was a very difficult time. And again, with the kids, you know, my three boys, Ewan, Mark and Callum, coming up at that particular time, you know, and studying at night. But I think again, for me, I look back in the day when I graduated. Through it, Stirling, you know, and I think to myself, you know what, the three boys were there, and they see what hard work when you're up in the room, and I keep saying to myself, I'm up here because I didn't work hard at school, and I still say that to them to this very, very day, because your education is the most important thing. No football, education. Get yourself educated, because see, if you're good enough, you'll make it in football, and that's what I ultimately believe. That you work hard enough and you're good enough, you'll make it in football. But the hires are the most important. Your hires are the most important exams I think you'll ever sit, if you're fortunate enough to be able to go and progress to that kind of level. For your future, for foundations. In adversity, if you become a sports person, you know, and things don't work out for whatever reasons, then you've got a fallback position, a contingency plan. It's just inbred in me. I've always got that kind of fallback, that safety net, that kind of mentality. Like, what's my safety net? What's my contingency? What's my contingency plan? If this doesn't work out, what am I going to do? And I've got that attitude in the work as well. But again, it's a New College Lancers is a fantastic, fantastic organisation with lots of fantastic people. And again, you know, I'm just very, very fortunate that I've been supported and guided throughout my time at the college by very, very good people who have obviously put their trust in me, and hopefully I've not let them down.
No, I don't think there's any doubt that you have absolutely excelled in that role, and still quite often bump into you at Fir Park. I assume the club still remains very much in your heart, and it must have been good to see them enjoy such a good season up until the point where obviously the season was disrupted. It looks like they will end the Premiership campaign in third place. Should bring European football next season. It's a fantastic achievement for Stephen Robinson and his players.
An incredible achievement. And as I say, I do the education program with the boys during the week, and I get to meet the players. I've done that now for years, and they've seen me for years. And they're a great bunch of great, that you know, Stevie and whatnot, his backroom staff, absolutely fantastic. You know, right approach, right mentality, and just yeah, great. I'm the way you can see, you know, within the club. Excuse me, lots and lots of very, very good things. And also working with the kids, you get to know and you get to hear things that's going on as well. I mean, they just have conversations, and you know, sometimes it's better to listen than to say anything. And that you get a lot of information from that as well. So, but no, they're doing great. They're fantastic. Third place is an unbelievable achievement. You know, they're punching well above their weight. With the greatest respect, so grateful we had a great start to the season. You know, and that continued for most of the season, and that stood in very, very good stead, and being again fortuitous in terms of the way things have happened, that we're in third position, and then, you know, hopefully that'll be us in Europe, and another great experience and great challenge ahead, and something to look forward to in this period of uncertainty.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. And just a final one, the likes of David Turnbull, you've obviously the departures of James Scott, Jake Hasty, Alan Campbell, who's cemented himself as an absolute mainstay in the first team. So many good youth prospects coming through the ranks. Mudd will continue to do it on a yearly basis now. It's almost become the norm that an exciting young player will emerge. And not only that, when he gets that opportunity, he's going to take his chance as well.
Absolutely, and that's what it's all about. You know, it's you know, I describe it to the young players as if something. So a lot of people think when they sign for a football club, young players, they've made it. All you've done is sign a bit of paper. You know, with the greatest respect, and giving yourself an opportunity to go and develop and grow. And it's like if you imagine a townhouse with a cellar, and then you're done in the cellar, and then you come up, and then you're on the ground level, and then you've got another two or three floors above you before you're in the attic, and then you can open that skylight, and it's the sky's the limit. That's the challenge. That's the journey that they've got to travel on. And all the way through that journey, there are a lot of people who try and knock them down, you know, who are quite happy to try and have a negative impact and influence, sometimes through jealousy. And it's just trying to guide them and lead them in the right manner and the right way, which the club do, you know, and you try and bring your experience of life, which I do all the time when I'm in the classes with the boys, and my experience is how I think. And sometimes, this might sound very strange, but the money will take care of itself if you take care of yourself. And I believe in that. And you've got good fortune, you know, and you don't pick up injuries or things like that. You know, you have a great opportunity, and you've got to grasp it with both hands, because as I say to them when they sign the contract, when I see them for the first time, this will be the quickest 2 years of your life. And you, after the first Christmas, say that's 6 months, baby. That's 25% of your time here at this club, because you talk about the attrition rates and that, and I speak to them in that kind of language. You know, listen, it's a very, very difficult job. It's a very, very, you're not all going to make it. You're not friends. You're teammates. You know, I could get, you know, you think in really true friends, and you know, the number of players who have been through the football club, made a lot of good friends, but no friends who you trust implicitly. You know, because it's that kind of, it's a competitive environment. And that's what they've got to remember. They're part of a team. It's teammates that are there, because each and every one of them are trying to get a contract, and ultimately they can't all get contracts. So it's then the hardest working player, and I think for me, Alan Campbell epitomises hard work. By all accounts, and even as a young player, he was trained like a bit like Coop in a sense. And in terms of, I reflect back on that in terms of him in training during the day, and he's out running at night. And that's what he's got. Like, he's got the engine, you know, and then it's his engine, attitude, and his drive, and his belief. And his confidence growing within himself, and you, and learning the game. You know, he's learning the game, and you continue to learn the game, in different environments, in different areas of the pitch, wherever you might find yourself in situations. And he'll grow, he'll prosper, and good luck to him, because, you know, as I say, he's the right type. And that might sound very strange. There are types in football, and he epitomises the right type for me.
Yeah, he's an incredible athlete, and he has had, he's almost had 3 seasons now of just solid football, whether that be going away with the under-20s or the 19s or 21s during the summer months. He just doesn't seem to have had a rest, but he just kicked on and kicked on. A really, really great example to the rest of the boys coming through.
And I think it's important to recognise how the club manages the young players. I mean, I think how he's been, you know, Alan Campbell's been able to do that kind of thing. Ultimately, the club can't stop players moving on, young players moving on in the search of their dream, which is fantastic. What you know, as long as the remuneration of the club, you know, is good, then we really can't complain, you know. And then in looking at it in terms of the Davey Turnbull situation, the situation Davey's found himself in, and coming back, absolutely fantastic, and how the club have looked after him. You know, it's a great club. You know, and that's the most important thing for me. That people, it is a fantastic club, with great people working within it. You know, and sometimes within football, I used to say at that particular thing, the most important people in this football club are the people who make sure everyone's ready for the players on a Saturday to go and perform on their arena. And that's who you're talking about, your kit men and all that kind of stuff. You know, the chef who's in there just now preparing the food for the whole week. The ground staff who are getting the ground ready, prepared. These are the forgotten people, the people who are looking in the background and looking after the functions and all that kind of stuff, all that kind of stuff. Because the managers and the assistant manager and the coaches all know their roles, all know what needs to happen, and it's that 90 minutes on the Saturday that's the most important. And hopefully a good performance, but ultimately the result. And that's what the week revolves around. But to get there, there's just lots and lots of good people in the club. And yeah, I've been privileged to not only been a player, but as you know, and as a coach and as an interim manager, if you like, and going back in front as an outsider in a sense, in terms of the education programme, to be there and see what goes on in terms of the match analysis and all that kind of stuff as well, in the background, to prepare the players, to prepare the individually and collectively for the Saturday, for them to go and perform. And it's just been a great part of my life. Thankfully, it still is. And Emma, you know, long may it continue.
Jim, this has been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate your time tonight. I know that you're exceptionally busy, and it's good to hear that you and your family are in good health during these uncertain and difficult times. I wish you all the very best. And please, anytime you'd like to share more stories, you've got my number now. So let's do it again sometime.
No problem, Andy. Thank you very much. And obviously, at this time, obviously, there's a lot of people who deserve a lot of praise, and I think to everybody, because everybody's contributing if they're doing what they're asked, and everybody's contributing in terms of in the places of work where they have to work and whatnot, and the environments that they're working in, and just everybody take care and be safe, and hopefully that will be will come to an end sooner rather than later, but unfortunately, it won't be tomorrow. But always remember, we're a day closer. Every day goes by.
Yes, and let's hope that there's a time in the not too distant future where we're all inside Fir Park and back to enjoying what is such a big part of our lives. You've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, thank you and goodbye.